This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
7:19 on a rather dark and ominous Tuesday morning, 23rd of August. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, let's talk about food insecurity in Malaysia due to climate change. A few days ago, because the New Straits Times reported that strawberry farms in Cameron Highlands are warning of decreasing yields due to rising temperatures, and some sellers have even resorted to buy imported fruits from elsewhere before reselling it in Cameron Highlands. Do they like stick on another label or what?
Buatan Cameron Highlands. Anyway, minimum temperatures in the popular highlands have seen an increase of 7.5 degrees Celsius, and temperature recorded by the Met Department went to a maximum of 23 degrees Celsius. Besides coastal erosion and rising temperatures have been threatening the livelihoods of fishermen, the Star reported fishermen from Malacca witnessing a 60% drop in their income as the landing structure has been damaged. So what other correlations exist between climate change and food security, and how can Malaysia adapt its agricultural policy to these situations?
For some answers, we turn to Amin Kamal. He's the head of science and technology at Emera Research. Good morning, Amin. Now, in the Global Food Security Index 2021, four dimensions of food security were used. That is affordability, availability, quality, and safety and natural resources and resilience. How well have agricultural policies in Malaysia actually adapted or adopted climate change resilience?
Good morning, Philip and Xiaoning. First of all, thanks for having me. So we are experiencing warming and higher global mean temperatures point to adverse impacts such as heat waves, agricultural droughts, flood, and so on. This impacts rainfall as well. So with all these things happening in the background, how has Malaysia responded to this? And you brought up the Global Food Security Index. And the short answer is we've responded pretty bad because we score poorly in those dimensions, specifically in the dimensions of environmental sustainability and resilience against climate change. The Global Food Security Index 2021, I'll just recap some of these points, which is we have mentioned this many times in our writing, but I'll mention it again for the purpose of your listeners. So 41.5% score Malaysia received for the indicator of political commitment to adaptation, 100% being the most favorable, where the global average is 60.9. We scored 0 out of 2 for the indicator of early warning measures for climate smart agriculture. And we scored 0 out of 2 since 2015 for the indicator of national agriculture adaptation policy. As for natural resource resilience, I'll just give two examples. First is the ocean, rivers, and lakes indicator. We scored 18.5%, which is critically below the world average of 60.9%. And then we scored 5, which is the highest risk rating for agricultural water risk, pointing to serious water pollution. So those are pretty worrying set of indicators that's pointing to where we are now in terms of our performance, or more accurately, lack thereof in terms of climate change mitigation.
Closer to home, we hear stories of rising temperatures in Cameron Highlands affecting farm and food production. Are other parts of Malaysia's agriculture industry also impacted by climate change? And is food security in Malaysia threatened by climate change?
Yeah, absolutely. Other herbaceous plants, fruits or vegetables that require similar climate would be adversely affected. It's not limited to herbaceous plants, fruits and vegetables. For Malaysia, for example, let's look at the staple food, which is paddy or rice. If you look at an older source by researchers from UKM, the decline of paddy rice yield is between 4 to 6% for every 1 degree Celsius increase under that level of CO2. And it doesn't stop at our staple food. Another one that's very popular in Malaysia is, of course, palm oil. There are plenty of studies looking into the effect of rainfall on palm oil, for example. And although increasing rainfall, total average increasing rainfall and increasing CO2 concentration in the atmosphere may increase the yield of palm trees, there are many other factors that lead to lowering yield. So the odds are against it. For example, irregular rainfall, despite total higher rainfall, expected temperature increase, rising sea levels, and more uncertain or unknown impacts from the changes in the pest or diseases, or the level of pollination due to climate change. Not only palm plantation, and I've mentioned about rice, our staple food, but even animals will be affected. For example, the recent chicken shortage issue chicken breeders were actually affected by the heat wave, because apparently even the chickens lose appetite and they get tired quickly, and they slow down in terms of gaining weight and also in terms of reproduction. So it affects food security across all sectors. Yeah, and also there's the World Bank also mentioned that in general, this is not a perfect quote, but basically the droughts and the flood that happened early in the rice growing season would could reduce yields up to 60%, and also have other impacts for our ability to cultivate things such as rubber, cocoa, and I already mentioned palm oil just now.
Now, at the same time, the pandemic has taught us that Malaysia should, of course, shift to being more self-sufficient. So I'm curious, what kind of policies can be put in place to improve this, whilst also developing clearly what we need, sustainable agriculture practices?
We have to take this matter as a national security priority, which means we don't wait for this thing to occur, and this realization has to occur first. When it comes to food security, we have to realize that we have disjointed policies. For example, we have changing self-sufficiency levels, especially for our staple food such as rice. So we need a commitment to self-sufficiency, at least for staple foods or other foods that we categorize as critical self-sufficiency, whereby we have to embark on a localization of supply chain as much as possible. Then we embark on the focus on climate change. For example, Cameron Highlands, we have to be serious in protecting the forest and stop land clearings and protecting the water catchment. In a bigger scale of things, we practice circular economy and we apply robust technology and we practice regenerative agriculture to maintain our topsoil so that we can constantly keep on planting food. And we have to realize that we have to include water, energy and food security nexus as part of the disaster preparedness and resilience against climate change. And that means we have to guarantee that our food production units are not just standalone, but they are seen as critical food production units in times of need. And we have to guarantee constant energy and clean water, for example. And the water could be from water supply infrastructure. It could be from water supply companies, state or self-sponsored means of producing their own water. And likewise, energy ideally should be provided by energy supply infrastructure from both power supply companies or state or self-funded means of generating electricity and so on and so forth, and even renewable sources of energy. And of course, all of these policies and supporting policies, you have to make sure that we address the structural problems of implementation, which is mismanagement, governance issues, and we put what we call the input, output, outcome and impact model.
Are there alternative food crops that the country needs to switch to become more resilient?
For the first part, we actually have a dedicated research center that's focusing on underutilized crops for food and non-food users in the crops for the future. And the head of CFF, Professor Syed Azam Ali, mentioned a list of what he called as forgotten crops. For example, moringa trees, bambara groundnuts, and kedondo, in fact. But however, there are opinions from the experts that said that our taste buds will actually have to change, and that we have to look into all these other alternative or forgotten crops. But I think CFF would be the best to elaborate more on this. My comment on that is this is the thing when we try to bridge the national security gap, is that it has to transcend the traditional and purely economic reasons. Because, of course, the question remains whether these alternative crops would have the market or would have the demand or not. Now, for the second part of the question, why we have been slow to adopt policies and systems to face climate change. First, historically, we moved from agriculture to industrialization due to the perception of and the fact and the reality that it has higher impact to the GDP. So agriculture took a backseat. And then probably we have taken things for granted. We took for granted the relatively stable climate, relatively less natural disasters, abundance of natural resources, and so on and so forth. And then this has led to disjointed policies or lack of awareness among policymakers. A result of all these things, we have a lack of industry champions as well. We have huge plantation conglomerates, for example, to champion palm. But for rice, for example, it's a monopoly, right? And if you combine that with high subsidies and old practices, it's non-competitive. And what about other crops? Who are the industry champions for these minor food crops, right? And an underlying factor is, of course, the perception that it's relatively less sexy, relatively less profitable, and, of course, lack of forward thinking, because it does require long-term investment. And if you have policymakers who are worried about their job over a four-year duration or less, problems that are 10 years down the road, for example, they are considered problems for the next guy, and the problem perpetuates and it never gets addressed.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Amin Kamal, Head of Science and Technology at Emory Research. Up next, we'll be talking about the partition, India's 75th anniversary of it. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.